how to start?
Well, you know, it's just writing. I mean,
here's something important to remember about dialogue.
Every word matters.
No, it doesn't.
They're vital.
I want to go to this place that I think it needs to go to.
The only thing that counts is what you see on the screen.
I will write like 4, 5, 6 hours a day.
And it will be a voice made of ink and rage.
Okay, I'm really glad you asked me that question.
Welcome back to the show. In this episode, I sat down with screenwriter Bill Kennedy, who's perhaps best known for his work on House of Cards and The Morning Show. We talk about how he almost became a lawyer for a little while back before college, how he thinks about doing background research and working with experts, especially on shows where politics or how a media room works are involved, how he got to work on The Morning Show and what they did for season 3, bringing in Jon Hamm as the somewhat Elon Musk type character, how he thinks about writing for movie stars, and why he's always, always, always working on a spec script. Here's my conversation with Bill Kennedy. You can also find this on the Creative Screenwriting website.
I guess when I was in, like, the real origin story is when I was in high school, I got a job working at a law firm, like making photocopies. And then I was convinced I was going to become a lawyer. And I met this guy there who was probably like 10 years older than me, you know, in his early 20s, who was also making photocopies. And he was producing records at the time. And he was like, dude, why would you want to do this? Be a lawyer. And I said, I gave my teenage answer. And he was like, I don't think, try and notice if you think the people here are happy. And I don't know, I started to think, like, is this the only thing I could do? And I was always an avid reader. I love movies. I love TV. So in college, I really started to explore writing and creative writing. And I got really into it. And then I was writing a lot of short stories, wrote a novella for my senior thesis. And then moved out to LA, and I did the assistant thing for a long time. Mm-hmm. Kind of worked my way up in the assistant world, and then became the writer's room assistant on the first season of House of Cards. And then also worked as Bo Willimon's assistant during the production of that show. And that was a extremely formative experience for me. I got to pitch a lot in the room. I ended up getting promoted for season 2 to a staff writer. And then it was just kind of off to the races for me. I love getting to do it every single day. It is just the best, even at its most torturous.
What are some of the assistant roles for those kind of unfamiliar with that position?
Sure. Well, I started out working for like a mini studio that financed and produced, movies and TV, called Media Rights Capital. And they basically, they would finance and produce a show or a movie and then sell the distribution rights to another studio or network for TV. And so I was answering the phones for the guys that ran the company. And I was scheduling all their meetings, making sure everything ran on time. But, you know, you're sort of at the nexus. You're at a nexus of the business. You get to read a lot of scripts. You get to listen to your boss's phone calls when they're talking to big creatives. So, I got to listen to my boss's talk with huge directors and writers, and sort of see how the business really works and develop your sense of taste. And honestly, like, reading the scripts was the biggest part of it for me. I mean, I read every single thing that came through the door almost. You know, I probably read, you know, 6 scripts a week for 5 years. So I really sort of developed a voice. And then I was always writing at night. And then from there, I became an assistant on the writer's room assistant on House of Cards. And that's a different beast. It's, you're sitting in the writer's room with the people who are the writers on the show. Mm. And everyone's pitching ideas. And your job is to take copious notes and kind of keep the ideas that are propelling the show forward organized. When you're talking about a specific episode or a specific storyline, like you're sort of the keeper of the show almost, which is also an incredible job for an aspiring writer because it's almost like the entire show actually passes through you. And you get a really great sense from senior writers. How to pitch story, how to come up with, how to solve story problems, how to talk about character, and really just like the craft of making television. And then when you're in there for a minute and the writers start to trust you and you're doing good work as an assistant, you get to pitch things. You get to participate a little more in actually creating the story.
On something like House of Cards or The Morning Show, are you both of those are like on House of Cards, you have to kind of understand politics to some degree. The Morning Show, you have to understand how the newsroom works. How much my assistant, how much of that is research? Like, do you have to, if someone has an idea, do you have to, are you doing, what might you do in terms of research on to validate an idea or see if it makes sense logistically?
There's a lot, certainly there's a lot of research on both of those shows. There were budgets to bring in expert consultants. On House of Cards, we had a great constitutional lawyer talk to us about what a constitutional crisis looks like. Brian Stelter is a producer on The Morning Show, and he was a longtime CNN personality, created a sort of storied newsletter at CNN that covered the media business. He was a consultant, and the show is actually based on a book he wrote. There is a decent amount of research involved. I think, the thing, the way I always think about the research is that the research is the setting, not the story. So, like you have like these, and the story is fueled by the characters and their relationships and their opposing wants and needs. And so when you need these two people to butt heads, the research helps tell you the various ways they could butt heads, but the research doesn't lead the storytelling, I guess, if that makes sense. I think, if you're doing something that's based on a true story, the research then leads the storytelling a little more. So it's sort of, does that make sense?
And both of these are based on IP, I believe, but they also had like, are you is the writer's room looking at news stories? It seemed like The Morning Show came out not long after everything started, obviously with Me Too, based on a book or not. It seems like it was very much like in the same wave of the actual events happening.
I think for the most part, when you get a great piece of IP, it's inspiration instead of a guidebook. And you pick the things that you really like. There's a lot of stuff in IP, like whether it's a true story or a fictional story, like I think, people sort of non-writers or lay people watching a television show, they often are like, well, they took this, but they didn't take that. But like there's it's more like you look to it for both specifics and for really broad things like interesting character dynamics. And so the IP is an inspiration, but it's not it doesn't dictate the story. I can't really speak to season one and two of The Morning Show. I only worked on season three. So I don't know how the genesis of those stories, but I imagine that, I think the Me Too movement was happening in a big way, and it just became obvious, like we can't tell a show about media and the landscape we're in without talking about these huge issues. And so I think, again, it's like it's inspiration, not story.
What were some of the struggles of like season three? Because you know, by two seasons in, you are kind of getting past the initial like shock of the show. Like Steve Carell's arc was over at that point. What were some of the difficulties of like figuring out the next move with the show? Were they based on the book, or were they completely original, or all those things?
I think that, a lot of shows, I think, start with a big problem. And you gotta solve the big problem in the first one or two seasons, because otherwise the audience starts to get irritated by the fact the problem isn't solved yet. So in Morning Show, it was the Steve Carell character and everything that happened with him. I think, in Mad Men, it was Don Draper's secret identity. These sorts of problems, like, you have to sort of get to the end of them, because otherwise it feels like you're treading water. And once you get to the end of those problems, I think it's a great question. Like, what do you do next? It's about identifying like how the characters are stuck in this purgatory, where like, so I think for the Morning Show is really like Bradley needs Alex and Alex needs Bradley, but they also like, they're also kind of, so they're such different people, Alex is such a political animal and Bradley is so much a truth teller. So I think season three, thematically, it was really interesting because we were able to sort of flip those things on their heads. Like, Bradley became the liar of season three. She was the truth teller, but we sort of inverted that character and make her the liar. And Alex starts pursuing something that is truly genuine, that is going to hurt her career, which is this love affair with Karl Marx. So just sort of identifying like who the characters are and how you can sort of continually put them in a place where they're being challenged in a way that's both novel but also the same. That makes sense.
Is there anything, so you're talking about the seasonal arc and everything that, you know, the big ideas are going to happen obviously in the writer's room and with the showrunner. When it's your turn to write an episode, how much freedom do you have to like let a character grow a little bit? Like, how do you think about some of those things? Because there is such, you know, possibly small growth over 8 or 10 episodes. How do you think about that on an individual episode basis?
I think it really depends on the show. On Morning Show, our showrunner Charlotte Stout, who is an amazing leader, she really trusted people with their episodes to sort of craft, like, there was a lot of individual work with her guiding you and then bringing problems and big ideas and like sort of the broad ideas of the episode are sort of solved by all the writers in the room. And then at some point, all writers, like, you have to go off and work by yourself, and then you bring your ideas back to the room and you bring your problems back to the room. So there, the process I've found is always extremely collaborative but also very individual, because at some point you do have to get to go off by yourself and find some magic. You can't talk things to death. And I think that when you do find something unexpected that's really good, for the most part, if it works in the broader arc of the story, the showrunner can see it right away, and they know that the thing you've invented actually works really well within the broader arc of the story. And I think a part of that is also you're in the room every day talking about the whole season with all the other writers who are working on it, so you have a really good idea of what's going to work in your individual episode.
Is there anything, so both these shows are like kind of tentpoles, House of Cards for Netflix, Morning Show for Apple. Was there any added pressure to that? I mean, you're writing for movie stars for all of these. A lot of people are watching these shows. How did you think about, or did anything particularly give you the confidence to be able to write for these shows?
I mean, there's a ton of pressure writing for movie stars, for sure. Particularly, people who've done such great work with such great other writers. I think a lot of it is collaborative when a star is at that level too. Like, they sort of know what they like and they know what works for them, and they know they can read something and very quickly understand the like how the performance is going to work or not work. And there are a lot of moving pieces that sort of help grease all of these wheels. So, like, on Morning Show, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon both have excellent producers who are also working on the show, who are also helping the writers figure out, what is it that Jennifer Aniston wants to explore this season, or what is it that Reese Witherspoon wants to explore this season. And when you're working with someone that big, like, they're smart people and they know, and they're artists, and they know what they're interested in. And I think that's really cool, and it's not, it isn't, I've never found it scary. I've found it exhilarating.
Do you have any advice for, so kind of going from the assistant to one of the staff writers, was there any hesitation to kind of speak up in the room, or any advice for those people who are maybe getting their first staff writer position? How would you kind of advise them to go about, speaking up and sharing ideas, but also, sharing the best of ideas, I guess?
I think that, listening a lot is really important when you're first starting out. And then I also think that, writers are by and large pretty nice people. Like, we've all sort of been through it. So, if you're worried about speaking up in the room, I think it's also, whether you're an assistant or you're a young staff writer, cultivating relationships with the other writers in the room and talking about story with them. And, I think that's something that suffered in the age of the pandemic when everything moved online, is like, a lot of writers' rooms, you're in person and you have an office. So the room is meeting, you're at the office from 9 to 5 and you're maybe in the room for 5 of those hours. So those other hours, like, the temptation, I think, sometimes for writers is, oh, I'm gonna go shut my door and be an introvert, and work on my own pitches or whatever. But, if you're a young person in those rooms, finding people who are willing to mentor you at the mid-level and at the upper level, or even your peers, like, knocking on their door and asking them what they might think about a pitch that you're working on or that you're thinking about, I think is extremely useful, because a lot of times they can help you turn it a little bit, so it's going to land a little better in the room.
So you mentioned listening. You've done a great job of like getting yourself in those positions. Any advice for what to say or how to approach a potential mentor? Like, how do you kind of do that in a way that's mutually beneficial, if that makes sense?
I think you definitely want to wait a second before you ask anyone to read something. And then I think also, if there is a writer that you admire, knowing their work really well and then asking them about it and wanting to and being curious and wanting to talk to them about it, I mean, it's very flattering. Writers don't often get asked those types of questions. So if someone knows your work and wants to talk to you about it, it shows a real curiosity about the craft as well. I think in any business, flattery goes a long way. So if there is someone you're interested in mentoring in their career advice and having them as a mentor, getting to know them as an artist and then engaging with them at that level, I think is really valuable, for you too.
Are there any caveats to that? Because I've talked to a lot of inexperienced writers, and they may seek out you know, whoever they think is the most famous writer or whatever, whoever they bump into. But it seems like it would be more beneficial to find the writer who writes most like you strive to write, like the tonality or the genre or subjects. Any other caveats like that that kind of make sense?
I think you're spot on. Like, if you want to write thrillers, like, don't talk to a comedy writer. But I think in the process of seeking those people out, like, it's so hard to get a job writing in TV in Hollywood that the big name, like the big EPs and the showrunner of your favorite show is a very busy person.
Mm-hmm.
But the supervising producer, the co-producer, you know, those are working writers, and they're good at the job and they're figuring things out and they're a little more available and they don't get a lot of calls, you know? So I think, you know, if you run into an Oscar winning screenwriter at your coffee shop every week, that's great if you can create a rapport with that person, but you know, it's just as valuable to talk to somebody who is not, you know, on the marquee, but might be there in 10 years.
What are you kind of doing? So you mentioned like early in your career, you were maybe writing novellas and different things or working on pitches. What are you doing kind of in between the jobs? I know you're producing as well, but are you also writing specs and screenplays? Do you have other things you're doing as well to kind of stay sharp?
I am. I'm always working on a movie. Always. I always have a movie I'm working on. And for me, like my feature business is not as I don't make as much money writing features as I do in television. So for me, the feature stuff is, I sort of think of it as a loss leader. You know, whenever I start a new feature, I'm like, what's the feature that I know I'm going to want to write early in the morning or after work on my TV job that's interesting to me, that's fun, that's cool, that is going to be a piece of material that my goal isn't to sell the feature. My goal is to have the feature be something that everybody passes around and everybody's interested in reading. Because you never know what's going to sell in this business. So I think, like, you know, you have your stuff that you're sort of building your career on, but then I think it's also good to write things for yourself, which is something I continue to do. And yeah, and then, you know, I have probably like 10 television show ideas that I'm working on, and my first step is I usually write a pitch document for it. Mm-hmm. And it's as much as an exercise as something that I'm going to monetize.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I'm always thinking about, like, if I have a good TV show idea, or I think I do, like, understanding like the broad structure of how it would work as an ongoing series, like thinking about that helps me when I'm in a writer's room working on someone else's show.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in general, a lot of people get a little obsessed with the plot of whatever they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
What really the thing that sells a show or an idea is the ongoing dynamic. So ongoing dynamic between, you know, Tony Soprano and Carmela is like the phase, that's the engine of that show. And that character can't have everything he wants because it's impossible. He can't have the family, he can't have the mob family and the real family. Like, it's,
yeah.
So that's what I think of when I'm creating a show and writing my pitch document. And then if I'm like going out to work on somebody else's show, I try and find that thing in the show that I'm trying to get a job on, you know? So I'm trying to figure out, when I go in to meet on the morning show, what do I think that thing is on the morning show? It's Alex needs Bradley and Bradley needs Alex, but they both drive each other crazy and they're both sort of opposites. And like, understanding what that dynamic is shows the boss that like, I can, I can tell lots of different stories about this dynamic.
You see that differently as the theme? Do you see like the dynamic? Is that different than the theme of the show?
I think that, I mean, I think they both talk to each other, but the dynamic, I guess, is like, is about a relationship between two characters.
Okay.
Like, so in The Americans, like I, like the dynamic to me is Kerry Russell believes in the mission. Matthew Rhys thinks America ain't so bad, and he kind of likes living there. That's like the dynamic that fuels the drama of the show. I mean, thematically, that show's about a lot of things, but I guess I see it as something different because I see it as the drama fuel versus like the big idea that you're talking about.
Right. You mentioned writing specs that everyone wants to read. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like if you have 10 ideas for the next script, how do you know which one rises to the top? Is there something intangible about it? Does it have something to do with the zeitgeist? Is it more personal? Does any of that make sense?
Yeah. You know, I try and think of an idea that the thing that gets me excited about a spec is something that I feel like I can do better than anybody else. And that I really want to do, and that I'm, that's really exciting. And I think it's also important. I mean, you have to think about your audience. Like, I think when people sometimes, you know, a lot of advice people say is like, write something personal, you know? So then people go and they write something about like their teenage years, or like, you know, they write something that's very low concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to sort of think about like, what's an interesting, wild world I can play in that I know better than anybody else that has that sort of like high concept thing, but like, I'm going to write it different from anybody else, you know? Like I had an idea for a vampire movie. When I pitched it to my representatives, you know, they never tell me no because they do trust me, but they didn't necessarily see it. But I saw it, and I saw it on the page, and I just knew I could execute it quickly. And I knew it was going to be different from every other vampire movie that anybody's done. And I just did it, and I did it quickly. You know, I think that's like another thing. It's like speed kills, you know, like write the thing that like, you know, you can write that you like, it's going to be good and get it done, you know?
Any advice for those writers who are maybe struggling with the habit of writing, like you just said, speed, but they need to get to that point where they can be persistent enough to know they can quickly even write a draft. Anything about that, or even just the value of writing spec scripts besides monetary, just like growth or anything like that that comes to mind?
I think that there can be a very orthodox approach to writing a spec movie or a pilot that's like, first you have to do your beat, you have to do your character bios, then you have to do your beat sheet, then you have to do your like your outline. And I sort of think of it as like, you have this like huge box of sands that like you are going to make into a sculpture. And like, if you really want to work on the hands of the sculpture first, like you can work on the hands first, but at some point you're going to have to take a step back and see how the hands fit in with the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, sometimes I go from, I free write in a notebook, then I'll write a scene. Then like, the important thing is to keep writing. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're like, I hate outlining, I want to write a scene, go write the scene, but then come back to the outline. You know, like you have to, you don't have to go from like broad ideas to note cards, to outline, to script. You can go from broad idea to script, back to outline, back to note cards. It's like all of these things, all of these different ways of like preparing to write the screenplay are actually just like exercises to help you get out of ruts, you know, to help you unstick yourself, you know? Everybody gets sick of writing their outline, you know? So, like, when you get sick of writing the outline, stop writing it, but write something else about the thing you're working on, whether it's a scene or a character bio or like just mood, you know, or just thinking about theme. Like, you know, don't get locked into like a step-by-step thing. Like, the important thing is just keep going. So just keep, if you get stuck writing the script, go back to the outline. You know, I've been like halfway through a script and then stopped and then rewritten the outline and then come back to the script.
Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Before you take off, I want to give you a free gift. I'm giving you my first book, Ink by the Barrel, for free. That's the digital download and audiobook at brockswenson.com. Inside this book, you'll learn how to annihilate writer's block by embracing Elizabeth Gilbert's playful trickster mentality. You can learn to weaponize your anxiety with Kevin Kelly's different is better approach. And learn how to defend your time with Ryan Holiday's calendar anorexia mindset. There's just a few other ideas in the book, Ink by the Barrel. It's also based on over 400 interviews I've done right here on Creative Principles. So go steal that book right now, Ink by the Barrel, to learn how to be a prolific writer. You can get your copy, that's digital download and audiobook, at brockswinson.com, brockswinson.com. And if it's your first time here, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.